Coming up on this weekend, computer hardware, no hardware at WWDC 8086, a new Atari console and Intellivision. What decade is this anyway? ADATA's got a sweet new NVMe, a Braille monitor USB spec, and so much more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 468, recorded May 31st, 2018. 8086, a new Atari console, and Intellivision? What decade is this? Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most delightful, most affordable, and occasionally the most compact, densely nuanced reviews of products, news on the hardware side of things. We love the consoles. We love the processors. We love the desktops. We love the mobile. And today we love the Padre who's joining us because Mr. Ryan Shrout has been ensconced in a location I am not allowed to name for fear that lawyers will drop through the ceilings with terrible documents and pens to force me to sign them. Welcome, Padre.
I was chowing down on a couple terabytes of SSD, so, you know.
So you and I are both reviewing Synology's new 1618 Plus. They're getting rid of the 5-bay NASs. They're moving to 6-bay NASs. More drives, always better. I'm using a traditional rotating media in the NAS, and I'm sorry, what are you putting into that?
Well, I mean, rotating media is fine, Patrick. It's cute. You know, it reminds me of a simpler time in the world of technology. I'm dropping in some of Kingston's brand new UV500s. These are their 960 gigabyte or 1 terabyte drives that are replacing all of their other SATA options. They've got this now on the SATA side and then the 1000 on the M.2 side. And I just figured, you know, brand new NAS, why use spinning drives? Why not just go ahead and get 6 SSDs and see exactly how fast it will go with the 10 gigabit Ethernet card in there?
I will be very curious to see what happens in terms of overall SSD life based on the data scrubbing that's done by the OS.
I have been told that there is something that you can flip that will reduce the amount of bit flipping that the NAS does when it recognizes it has an SSD, which, as we know, is absolutely essential because, well, it's all about the writes. You're going to be limited on your writes, so you better make sure you only do them when you need them.
Beware, people.
Be very aware.
This will be fast. It could be. I mean, this is what? That's $1,800 worth of SSDs, give or take?
Yeah, these are about $300 a pop. So I just realized that actually we just did this on KnowHow, and I was like, wow, that there's a lot of SSDs that they sent. And by the way, I should also mention there's an M.2 cache card. So not only is it going to be fast SATA SSDs, but there's a PCIe connected SSD module in there that will cache these SATA SSDs. This is just for one of those cache on cache features. It's sort of like, yo, dog, I heard you like cache, so I put cache on cache.
I'm sitting here, I'm like, so this is not something that's particularly useful in terms of streaming video or playing files or downloading files of a certain size. I mean, this is for massive backups and massive file transfers, but mostly just because you can.
Yeah. It's let's be honest. I could put a bunch of justifications. This is all about bragging rights because with a NAS, you do really want the space. I mean, that's the whole idea. You have a big tub of storage. But what you get with SSDs that you won't necessarily get with rotating media, even with that M.2 cache card, is you get ridiculous transactions. You get a lot of transactions per second. So if you were going to be using your NAS to do something where you're going to be doing a lot of reading, say a financial transaction server, this actually is a legitimate way to go. Otherwise, as you mentioned, it's just Padre going, how many SSDs can I cram in this thing?
At least six. Oh, my goodness. Worldwide Developers Conference is coming. The rumor from Mac Rumors and everybody else on the planet, don't expect any hardware, health kit, AR kit 2.0, updates, very minor, we understand, updates to iOS, Mac iOS integration. I think that might be one of the big themes. But as far as new Macs, new iPads, and possibly larger screen Apple Watches, all that is going to be coming later this year. It is going to be
a very software-y Worldwide Developers Conference.
Now, I'd like to get your input on this, Patrick, because I've heard a lot of hate from some of my Mac fans who, you know, like, oh, well, Apple has lost the innovative edge and they haven't done anything new. WWDC never really was supposed to be the place where they released hardware. I mean, it's a developers conference, right?
WWDC, you know, as many vendors have separated product launches, major vendors have either left entirely or separated their project launches from the Consumer Electronics Show that takes place every January. Apple, I remember kind of distinctly several years ago when Apple separated its new hardware launches from WWDC. It was a very kind of like, we got an enthusiastic group of people and we're going to talk about the thing. And I can't remember the exact year, but basically there was this sort of tearing sound and WWDC became less important in terms of hardware. But at least that's the way it feels to me. You know, I think at this point, you know, as far as the Apple's lost its edge, you know, the original Apple Watch design still feels like a kludge to me, but in part thanks to a certain AR manufacturer who shall remain nameless until later in the show, not developing new chipsets essentially for watches. You know, you've got a case where Apple kept hammering away. They did the Microsoft thing. Like, one wasn't that great and two wasn't that great, but 3.0, you know, is a big deal. Apple's selling a ton of watches. You know, they're, I think, less interested in the iPads. Rumor has it they're going to be making some big changes to the MacBooks. They're actually talking to professionals to figure out how they use Mac Pros. Kind of crazy. Yeah.
I see WWDC this year kind of addressing three things that are happening to Apple. The first is the maturation of the product cycle. I mean, this happens to every company that comes out with something that's revolutionary. It will be revolutionary for X amount of time, and now it's become legacy. They have to support the products that they have, and you can't constantly be revolutionizing the products that you have because then they're no longer the products you have. The other part is there's actually a bit of a pushback. I believe they've got a panel, an entire track that's dedicated to curbing device addiction. That's kind of fascinating, actually, from a techie point of view.
They're actually adding new features. And so a big part of the coverage on this all centered around an article by Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg. And, you know, his lead was that, you know, Apple's going to be combating, you know, they've been hit a lot in terms of smartphone addiction. So there's actually going to be tools inside the Settings app in iOS 12. That's going to help you monitor how much time you're using your iPhone or your iPad, how much time you're spending on individual apps, and in theory, help you to wean you from your smartphone addiction. you know, I'll be very curious to see what the results of that are. And, you know, I think addiction is more complicated than that, but anything that helps you realize, like, gosh, I spent 9 hours on Instagram this week. I spent 22 hours on YouTube. Probably won't be a bad idea at all. Tony Fadell is one of the people quoted in the Bloomberg article. Quote, we need to have tools and data to allow us to understand how we consume digital media. We need to get finer grained language and start to understand that an iPhone is just a refrigerator. It's not the addiction, unquote. And that's a, you know, that's an interesting thing to declare, but is fundamentally true. But you could also say, you know, really the availability of heroin is not the problem. The problem is you. And as a recovering alcoholic, I can say, yeah, the problem is me. You know, once I stopped drinking and got sober, I perfectly safe to walk down the tequila aisle at Costco, but, you know, it's a lot of it's like, I think it was like JANA Partners, California State Teachers Retirement System, a bunch of the big shareholders were angry about the addictive nature of Apple's devices. And I think that's, It's an interesting thing to say. Who else do you go after? Do you go after Samsung? Because that article, which goes way back to basically, I want to say, like the week of CES, these two major Apple shareholders wanted a study of iPhone addiction in children and to give parents more control and access. This is an issue with Android devices too. I think Apple just is a better magnet for this because it's Apple and Apple's iPhone and Apple's operating system and Apple controls it versus the Android operating system, which is owned by Google and used by everybody on the planet. I will be very curious. I'm curious to see how ARKit 2.0 works because it's like AR games against each other in a virtual environment. We won't see an Apple AR headset probably until 2020.
Honestly, I don't think that's a bad thing. The AR and the VR space right now is very crowded. We have no idea who's going to be the winners. Apple has not always necessarily been about getting there first. They just get there with the product that they want. And right now, especially in the AR space, there's a lot of room for development. And I would like for them to wait to see which path you're going to go in the AR space. Are you going down more of a Microsoft HoloLens, something that more like Google Glass, which actually was a very different AR experience, or what we're starting to see now from Lenovo and from the other Google manufacturers. I want Apple to take the mistakes that are made by these manufacturers and give us something incredible, and hopefully they'll do that. As far as the addiction is concerned, I do want to chime in there because it's very easy to say that thing is the source of the addiction. That thing is doing bad things. And as you've already called out, it's never as easy as that, especially since we're technologists. We're the digerati. We understand that there are certain types of things we like to do. We like to stay in the know. But that hasn't always been about technology. I know people who are addicted to books. Like they will basically live their life tucked away in a corner with stacks of books. This is just a thing that's very easy to blame without actually dealing with the underlying causes of the addiction, which is right now everyone has a fear of missing out and everyone feels like they always need to be connected. Otherwise, they are missing opportunities. That's not as easy as just saying,
can you hold that thought?
We should give you an app. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Thanks. I'll be right back.
Bug it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. New photo on Instagram. Cat belly. Sorry. I'm kidding, actually. I did that, but it's... I agree. It's also managing, access to cell phone time, how you approach. I mean, it astonishes me how many of my children's cohorts, friends have their own smartphones and are, barely tweens and they have full time access to them.
Patrick, I feel like I'm becoming a curmudgeon because when I see like a toddler and they've got their own phone. It's not mom or dad's phone. It's their phone. Right. It's their device. I'm looking at that and going, I don't want to tell you how to be a parent, but that sounds like a really bad idea.
Well,
is that just me getting? Am I old now, Patrick?
It's not that you're old now. It's just maybe you've never had a 3-year-old drool its way through an iPhone and destroy it. So I can see where that might be financially. Or just simply in terms of not losing a primary communication device, particularly valuable feature to have the kids on phones. People do crazy stuff. A lot of it I've noticed doesn't even involve technology in how people parent. But I think it's something that we're just starting to get the beginnings of a tenuous grip on. Anytime you're at a concert and more people are looking down rather than up at the band, either A, the band really sucks, or B, something's gone horribly wrong, with people that paid a bunch of money to see an event but are actually too busy tweeting about it to enjoy it.
There's a cool contrast here because you can look at WWDC versus Google's event. And Google's event dealt with the same thing. I.O. had that section of the keynote where they were talking about addiction, but they didn't call it addiction. They were calling it wellness. It's wellness features. And I think that's a better way to address it because addiction sounds so negative. It sounds like, oh, there's a problem here and this will fix it. What Google was saying is like, look, people are going to want information. They're going to want these devices. We are going to give them the tools to find that boundary. Not that it's bad, but that if that's all you do, you are damaging yourself. Different ways of looking at the same problem. And I actually think if Gurman's predictions turn out right, I think Google did it better.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. There's a, you know, part of the reason I think Apple had to refer to it as addiction is because they've been called out by two major shareholders.
Right.
You know, so they couldn't be like, we've introduced wellness features to, you know, they may have introduced these features to mitigate the complaints from people that might impact the stock value. But, you know, it's probably easier for them to take it directly head on in the way that they did. I want to make a correction real quick. The abandonment I was thinking of in terms of hardware was Macworld, which, by the way, was the place where the first iPhone and the name of the Apple TV was introduced. But
I missed that show. Do you miss that show?
Yeah, I miss that show. I miss all the shows. But, you know, it was also Macworld 2009 was the last show where Apple participated. And then, you know, because Macworld was a huge deal to them. And then they basically, 2 years after the iPhone launch, they were done with it. At last year's Worldwide Developers Conference, that was actually the preview of the iMac Pro, the new iPad Pros, and that's where the HomePod was launched.
Right. Patrick, so it's I want to take us off the tracks a little bit here because I really do want to hear your perspective on this. The trend... And I would start this with Apple. Apple really set this off. It has been to bring in these big announcements in-house. You have your own show. Apple does their own show. Microsoft does their own show. Lenovo, et cetera. Go down the line. And it used to be the Comdex, the CES, the Mac world, where it was third party. I understand the value of having your own show, especially since sometimes it's actually less expensive to do it that way. But I think there's something that you get when you combine a bunch of vendors into a third-party space like a CES or formerly of Comdex that you don't get when it's all one vendor.
True, but you get total control over the release date.
Right, exactly.
And that's there was a wonderful, I want to say, Wall Street Journal story that talked about the insanity behind the demo for the launch of the first iPhone, where I think if any single thing in that demo was done out of order, the iPhone would basically vomit all over its own lap and pass out. So that's, you know, Mr. Jobs had to do this thing exactly the right way or everything would go horribly wrong. And, you know, they probably did it in that state because that was the only state they could do it in to meet that Macworld debut. And I also think, to be perfectly honest, in a lot of cases we see vendors wanting more control. And this is certainly something that Apple pioneered, like, well, if we only give our five sort of pets,
right,
you know, who say nothing but glowing things about our products, if our hand-selected mouthpieces do the initial seed reviews on the devices when they go up for order or when they go up for sale, pre-order, they go up for sale, then they have this huge amount of control because, A, they have leverage over that incredibly short list of people that get access to their products earliest, which gives them the most coverage, and B, you know, they get to kind of control the message that way. So I think a lot of this is simply about wanting to decouple product launches from major trade shows. And also, I think because the trade shows started becoming prohibitively expensive. But
yeah, they got too big for their britches.
we should probably go back to
the show.
The show. The hardware thing. Really quickly, iOS 11.4. HomePod finally gets stereo pairing and multi-room audio, which is two features I think it should have launched with. Yeah. But they needed AirPlay 2 to do that. And AirPlay 2 is now finished will be sliding out shortly.
So if that works properly, does that become your Sonos? Do you dump your Sonos and just get a bunch of HomePods?
No, I don't, because I've got, five Sonos devices in the house. But, you know, I've heard the HomePod. I enjoy the audio from the HomePod. At this point, the cost to buy in, that's, you're talking $700 for a pair of HomePods right now. That's more than, you know, I could do, get most of the audio, for $300 with a pair of Sonos Model 1s. So,
yeah.
You know, I just it's an expensive device, and I've discovered, as somebody who has a lot of audio devices scattered through the house, I really appreciate a pair of Sonos Model 1s. I like them a lot more than a single Model 3 or a Model 5. The whole stereo thing's a big deal for me. And also Siri's okay, but the option to use, Alexa or Google Home to control other audio devices is pretty strong. Reaching back into our youth, videocards.com got screen captures of online listings for the rumored 8086 anniversary CPU. It's going to be the 40th anniversary of the 8086, the original Intel microprocessor for personal computers. And if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the Intel Core i7-8086K, 5 gigahertz.
Wow.
481.27 euros.
Well, will they release an 8087K coprocessor? Because I remember those back in the day.
No.
Did you ever buy a coprocessor, by the way?
I think I had one machine with a coprocessor. Most of what I did not particularly need coprocessing. I had a Compact Portable 2 that I kept running until it was probably 8 years old when I finally replaced that with a Macintosh. I made that last a long time. It's also kind of crazy when you realize the original 8086 was, I think, running at 4.7 hertz.
Right, I know. Well, don't forget that turbo mode. Jack it up to 8 gigahertz. 8 megahertz. No. Yeah, 8 megahertz. So the 8086, mm-hmm. What process? Do you know what process they're using for this?
It's not going to be 7 nanometer. We shouldn't go down that rabbit hole, because we had an extended discussion last week about how sad it is that TSMC and several other fabs are kind of ahead of Intel in terms of process at this point, and how shocking that had happened.
This is really just sort of a PR stunt then. Aside from the processor speed, you're not really getting anything new here.
Well, we don't know a whole lot about the chip, so who knows? Maybe this is what they've been pushing off that new processor launch for 2 years, just so they could take advantage of the 40th anniversary of a processor that the vast majority of the consumers don't remember. it could happen. Ryan found a really interesting thing up on the Dell's website, G3 15-inch gaming notebook. Discrete GeForce graphics cards, 1050, 1050 Ti. They started like $700, which is really fantastic. 24 gigabytes of memory, 8 gigabytes of DDR4, and 16 gigabytes of Optane memory.
Nice.
Which
starting at $700 or just under $700?
Starting at $699.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah.
See, but that's something that you can only get when you buy a lot of components. That's wow.
Yeah.
Well, I have not yet been able to play with any Optane stuff, though. I mean, I'm excited.
It's incredibly uncommon. It's also, he also takes pains to point out there's a help me choose a more info link, and it makes it sound like it's 24 gigabytes of RAM, despite the fact that it's not 24 gigabytes of RAM. It's 8 gigabytes of RAM, but it's like improve overall system performance, deliver better performance and cost than just 8 gigabytes of DRAM. Intel Optane. And then finally, by the time you get to like 400 words into the third paragraph, the Intel Optane memory does not replace DRAM. it
oh,
can,
wait.
However.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at that's incredibly deceptive.
Yeah.
That is not 24 gigabytes of memory. It's an 8 gigabyte system that has a 16 gigabyte Optane module,
which can be used to accelerate system storage. So it's if memory isn't the bottleneck, and you've got a standard hard drive instead of an SSD, Optane is going to be a huge boost. If you do have an SSD, you basically, if you need more than 8 gigabytes of RAM, you're still better off having 16 gigabytes. But it's pretty interesting. Like, 16 gigs of Optane memory is like $25, which is way less than an 8 gig SODIMM slot. It's going to be like $80 or $90 right now. You know, it's not going to let you run, the Optane memory is not going to let you run more applications. It's not going to let you run games that want more than 8 gigabytes of memory. Not that that many do. What would be really slick is if you had 16 gigabytes of DDR4 and 16 gigabytes of Optane memory is one of the things that Ryan points out. It's a good article. I was also crazy with the idea that you can get a 1050, you know, a laptop with a 1050 Ti or a 1050 for like $700, $720. That's a pretty fantastic deal when you look at that. And that's the G315 gaming series. So,
you know, Patrick, I'm actually starting to look at the laptop that I'm going to get for my new position. And I've been really big into the Razer Stealth Blade, the new one with, I think it's 16 gigabytes of memory. It's got that 4K, 13 or maybe 12.2 inch screen. Of course, it's integrated graphics, but then I also have the little core unit that I can plug into it and you know, drop a 1080 into that. Would you go with an Ultrabook that had the core option, or would you get a slightly larger notebook with a slightly larger monitor for actually less money that had something like a 1050 in it?
Man, it's a tough call. Like, are you, you know, is this for gaming? Is this for video editing? I will say I Razer's done a good job. We hope, actually. Shannon bought one of the Razer Blades, had to return it twice because of trackpad issues. She's not the only person that had that. They have actually radically changed the technology in the trackpad on the new model, which she was pretty excited about. You know, I, you know, whenever possible, prefer a desktop to a laptop. You know, the core system is going to improve your graphics. You know, I would rather have a 1060. I feel like I would rather have a 1060 on the motherboard inside the laptop than a 1070 in an external box, which may not be healthy or accurate. But, you know, anything that's inside the laptop travels with you, and you don't have like, I have my laptop and I have my lunchbox.
Yeah. See, that's I'm afraid that's what's going to end up happening. It's going to be, yeah, it's a separate module, but I'm going to have to carry it with me everywhere I go because I edit on the go.
Yeah, and the thing about what's crazy about this latest round of mobile chipsets from NVIDIA, these mobile GPUs from NVIDIA, is they are essentially at performance parity with the desktop units. It's not like it was for the last decade where it's like, well, you can get the one for your laptop, but it's 20% slower. They're super tight and super close in performance. So I would say you're probably better off getting the fastest GPU you can get integrated into the laptop. Over using the lunchbox. The other thing is, you know, storage is always a primary concern for me. Right. And a bigger laptop gives you more storage. So
I've already decided.
I'd be pretty happy either way.
I'm not doing one of those laptops that only has a USB-C port. I absolutely hate that type of solution. I need something that has at least one USB-C and at least two USB 3.0. If you don't have that, that's I'm out. That's table stakes for me because I am so sick and tired of daisy chaining off that USB-C port to the point where I can't move the laptop because if I move it a bit too much, suddenly I've broken the chain and everything goes crazy.
I was laughing about there's a lovely Dell 7000. We had a viewer asking like, you know, what do I do if I want to spend less on a notebook? And I was like, well, you know, I love the XPS. I'm using one right now. It's my day-to-day carry notebook. But when you look at a 7000, you can get the same configuration. It won't be as small. It won't have the sort of infinity edge bezel, but you'll spend $250 less. And you'll get a whole bunch of ports around the edge that they eliminate on the svelter, more high-end laptops. And that kind of made me laugh. So it's tough. I'm not a big fan of the single-port laptop.
Nope.
But they are certainly the way so many designers are pushing the high end. Did you see the Atari VCS?
I did.
That went up on Indiegogo yesterday.
I am ashamed to say that I actually really want one of these.
Why are you ashamed? Outside of the fact that it's an Atari.
It's an Atari. I mean, it's absolutely a nostalgia play. I get it. But I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, man. I mean, that's the little 6-year-old geek in me wants this so bad. Oh. They even brought back the original controller, which I love.
I think you have to if you're going to call it an Atari. You know, Proprietary Atari VCS user interface with optional voice control and integrated web browser for full access to all that the internet has to offer to navigate and curate your personalized entertainment experience. Built on an open source Linux operating system so you can add your own software and apps to customize your own platform. So it's like an Atari Plus.
You see, but I look at this, and already in my mind, I'm thinking I want to mod the case to add the cartridge slot. Now, the cartridge doesn't have to do anything, but I want that cartridge slot because I'm so... that's what I'm used to. I remember having my collection of Atari cartridges,
but it's got 100
ET, by the way. I know, right? It's like the NES Classic, same idea. Now, Patrick, you know, looking at this, looking at the NES Classic, looking at things like every multi-billion-dollar movie that we're seeing in the last 5 years being from 80s and 90s comic books. Are we now in the generation of nostalgia? We just create things for the kids who have now grown up?
I think nostalgia kind of swings through
every
few years. It just swings through with a slightly different generation. My concern on this, I'll be honest with you, I think it's cool. I really do. It's fun. I never had an Atari, so I'm not as emotionally bonded to it as a lot of people I know are. I think it's an interesting way of doing it. I think kind of my primary concern, like it's slick, right? They've got an emulator. Right. They're making the games legal. There's lots of cool stuff going on here. Especially that commercial you're looking at right now. It evokes all of the feels of the original Atari. And if you want to pay less money, you can get, you can skip the fabulous wood grain trim and get the sort of onyx version of it for, I want to say $100 less. It's like $199 for the all black version, the early version, and $299 for the collector's edition.
From experience, by the way, the ridges in the case, that is it looks fantastic until it gets a little bit old, and that's the collection spot for any dust that might be in your house, it looks amazing. The other thing is I think they need to sell this along with that little RF adapter that you used to have to attach to the antenna ports of your TV with the little screw terminals.
I actually have one of those to deal with certain... No, every so often somebody comes up with me to an old device, and I have one around just for dealing with super ancient devices. The thing with me for this right now, it's really cool and it's really exciting, but I've eaten two Kickstarter projects in the last couple months. OSIC 10 went down in flames, and it turns out one of the second project, the second Kickstarter project from the crew that did the $9 PC chip, they went out of business.
I've been lucky. I've never lost a Kickstarter. I had one that was delayed by 2 years, but never actually gone down on one.
Yeah. Well, it is definitely, there's definitely been some Kickstarter fail in my life in the last couple of weeks. That makes me a little uptight about investing in something that on some levels looks really, really simple. And on some levels, some things that seem to be done haven't shipped. Right. But I think it's an interesting idea. Certainly people are really excited about it. The thing that had me giggling hysterically is another Jeremy posted the story up on PC Purr yesterday. In television, Tommy Tallarico, who's worked in the gaming industry, is reviving in television. A new concept, design, and approach to gaming.
Can they bring back those the controllers that were incredibly uncomfortable to use?
That was one of the I remember playing that in a Sears, an electronics store somewhere at the mall. It's like 1979. It was designed to compete with the Atari 2600. Use speech synthesis in a game that was really amazing. This guy, Tommy Tallarico, is financing the revival. I'm just laughing because it was 932 bytes of graphics RAM on the original.
Monster.
Was in production through like all of the 1980s. Nobody really knows what it's going to be because all that they've said is new concept, design, and approach to gaming.
You know, Patrick, these youngins have it easy. They don't remember we lived in an era of consoles where you didn't actually know which way you were supposed to hold a controller because all the ways you could hold them hurt. It's not like today where everything is ergonomically designed and the second you hold on to the controller, there's a right way to hold it. I remember the controller for the ColecoVision and I was like, wait, Sideways? Why am I playing with this thing sideways?
No one understands.
It was a different era. This is a different.
If you sign up though for Intellivision, they're not going to announce anything until October 1st. But the first 100,000 subscribers to their email list will have access to a limited edition version.
Which does what?
It's limited edition. That makes it the cool version. Oh my goodness! A.XPG SX 8200 480 gigabyte M.2 NVMe SSD review budget performance rights. Alan Malventano. I like how he says this. ADATA has a habit of occasionally coming out of the woodwork and dropping a great performing SSD on the market at a highly competitive price. So one of the issues with ADATA in the past has been availability. They seem to have made their products more readily available in a larger group of channels. Impressive sequential read performance, excellent read throughput and mixed workloads, very competitive cost per gigabyte. Apparently the caching was a little inconsistent, but it did pick up a gold PC Perspective Award, or the PC Perspective Gold Award. And, you know, this is pretty crazy. You're looking at 35 cents a gigabyte for the 320 terabyte version, and that's for an NVMe drive. $350 for the 960 gigabyte version, 2 terabyte version coming later this year. That's very competitive pricing. This is pretty cool. Cost-friendly format. I'm going to quote Alan here. Cost-friendly offering from ADATA's XPG line, pairing the SM2262 with IMFT 3D NAND and turning in chart-topping figures and some of the more important performance metrics measured by our test suite. Solid endurance ratings and a 5-year warranty round off a competitive solution that can only help push NVMe SSDs into even more affordable market sectors. The ADATA XPG SX8200 offers surprising performance from what would otherwise be considered a budget SSD. So one of the things that Alan notes is that, you know, these you know, he calls them aftermarket SSD controllers. I'll call them less common. I want to call them second tier because that's A, obnoxious, and B, the performance on this is pretty amazing. But that's a pretty good deal.
3200, 1700 for a budget drive isn't bad. One of the things that I've been noticing, though, as I've been putting more M.2 parts to their paces, is especially on the budget parts, you have to be careful how you test them, because they may be able to burst really well to the speeds that they've actually rated, but they haven't accounted for the incredible density that they've put on a single stick, M.2. And so they derate. The controller will actually derate once it starts getting hotter. So put it inside of a case with very little ventilation. That's where you actually should be doing your benchmarking. The higher end parts all have heat spreaders, or they've been designed in such a way that the density is not actually going to tell the controller, hey, drop your performance in half because you're about to melt.
I feel comfortable that Alan's nailing that testing to the floor. I mean, to put this in perspective, like a 950 Pro NVMe, you're looking at $585 for the 512 gigabyte version of that. The 960 Evo series, where did that go? The 500 gigabyte version of the 960 Evo NVMe drive is selling. Oh, hey there! It's down to $225.
Right.
Somebody might need a new hard drive.
you can accomplish.
Is that the NVMe version?
That is.
Hmm. Interesting. But where is it on the performance? I'm going to stop. There's nothing more horrifying on a podcast than someone reading benchmarks. Not actually discussing them, but physically reading them while ignoring the podcast. Synopsys presented a USB 3.2 demo. We're looking at a doubling of speed, which on one hand is awesome, and on the other hand, USB 3.1 is so stupid fast that it's not particularly useful to double that speed. But essentially, Synopsys posted a YouTube video. Scott Michaud wrote this up at PC Per. They had two bonded lanes over a standard Type-C cable connected using a host USB 3.2 controller, quote, embodied by an FPGA board. The device controller is the same hardware that was configured to be seen by the pair as a USB device. And, you know, USB 3.2, long, long way away. But, you know, as Scott writes, more bandwidth is always better.
Right. And they do have to plan for the future, because USB 3.1 is as fast as the previous generation of Thunderbolt. So they're going to want to rev that. Now, we don't actually have devices that are going to be using that, but at some point, if we do plan to do USB connected bus devices like video cards, it will be handy. It will be mm-hmm. actually kind of nice. And there are a couple of products right now that are releasing SSDs connected via USB-C, USB 3.1 that almost will saturate the bus, almost. And when you start putting those in RAID configurations, I guess the 3.2 might actually become useful. What you need that speed for would be if you're a video editor, if you're one of these people who needs to back up your machine constantly because you are in a space where you don't want to lose your assets. Again, niche case, but the nice thing about those niche cases is it means that the rest of us will get far more capable USB-C devices way sooner than we actually normally would.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to turn down free speed, Patrick. Are you?
Well, depends on how many other things I have to upgrade to get that speed.
True. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. $90 MSRP Corsair HS70 wireless headsets just got announced this morning. The crew over at PC Per, Sebastian Peake, did a review of that. He was very enthusiastic about it. He had one caveat. His initial testing out of the box was a little disappointing because the battery was low. And because, of course, this is a wireless device and all of the amplification is provided internally and battery powered, it was not particularly awesome performance. But once the battery is charged up, the performance was pretty solid. As he put it, these perform differently on a low battery, so don't judge them straight out of the box. Pair of 50mm drivers. He said, excellent bass, excellent high end, solid mid range. He was, I think he was pretty much delighted that, unlike a lot of the gaming headsets in this price range, you know, where there's too much bass and not enough, basically that V shape where there's lots of treble and lots of bass and you can't hear the voices. He said, these put most of the gaming headsets on the market to shame with their remarkably clear sound. I gave them a Editor's Choice Award. That's a pretty fantastic price for a wireless headset. You're looking for up to 16 hours. They're rated for 16 hours of battery life. He was saying, think 10 hours at 60-70% volume is good. And if you turn the volume down, you can push them harder. But it's not a bad looking headset either.
This is, again, as you mentioned, it is a gaming headset, but it doesn't act like a gaming headset. I actually got my hands on a pair of these. Mm-hmm. The closest thing I would compare it to is something like the Plantronics Backbeat Pro, which is twice the price, actually more than twice the price of this, which is also a wireless. But that one has the option of being a wireless or wired headset, which I really, really like. Now, the one thing about these is I wasn't overly thrilled by the feel of the cup. I think it would probably become painful over if I was to use this for video editing, where I'd have it on my head for a long period of time. But as a gaming headset, it sounded more like that Plantronics than, say, like a Beats by Dre, where everything is just bass.
Well, I got to say, I also probably, there are very few gaming headsets I would even remotely consider for doing video editing, just because they tend to be so peculiar in the way they're voiced. But certainly something to...
Actually, let me ask you about that. I mean, I know you're still a fan of the Hi-Fi Man. Is there any planar gaming headset?
I'm a little less enthusiastic about the Hi-Fi Man than I used to be, simply because the ones I have tend to get very fatiguing because there's so much emphasis on the highs. But actually, Odyssey just announced a gaming headset, the Mobius, and I got to listen to that down. We did a review of that, a very short review of that. I talked about it on AVXL and on Tech Thing based on some ears on time I got down at CanJam LA. But they decided to do that as a Kickstarter. They had finished headphones. The pre-order price is like $339 now. It's the retail price is like $399. So it was impressive. I don't think they are as good as, say, Odyssey Signs, but that's a $500 headphone that does not include a microphone. Well, you know, that doesn't include sort of a microphone on a stick and doesn't have the head tracking they built into this. They're pretty good. They're solid. And it's interesting. There are a lot of vendors that are looking at gaming and realizing there are a lot of gaming headsets that sound kind of crappy.
Yeah.
And,
they look good though. They've got accents and some of them even have LED lights. They just don't
see. Yeah. Your LED lights mask your motherboard. But I also got to say Kingston's, the HyperX stuff,
HyperX Cloud
is really good. You know, that's also $80 with a cable, but I think it's one of the best sounding headsets out there. Right. And certainly is a lot less, there are some wired headsets out there that cost $200-$300 that I don't think deliver the same audio quality as the HyperX, or the HyperX Cloud. But that's also one of the weird things about headphones is that in a lot of cases you can pay a lot of money and not particularly get a great experience.
Yeah.
But
let's be honest, the gaming experience is different than say the hi-fi experience. It really is. You're emphasizing two different things. Jason Howell got a series of planar headsets and they have spoiled him. They've destroyed him for regular headsets for when he's doing his actual content production, his music work. And I like those, but I would never use those for gaming.
I think it's partially because so much of what we've listened to gaming audio with is so unnatural that may have kind of tweaked what you're listening to. There are dynamic drivers or, traditional headphones that are just as good as planar magnetics. But when you get to some of the high-end planar magnetics, the results are pretty amazing. That's also are you going to spend $800 for a set of headphones?
It also depends on the game because, when I'm playing something like a first-person shooter, if I'm playing Call of Duty, there's a different type of headset that I want versus if I'm gaming, with Solitaire. That's really... completely different.
I didn't know we were still considering Solitaire a game. I will mock you later. Quick announcement. Microsoft and Apple helped build a new Braille display standard. USB Implementers Forum announced that. Actually, I was kind of pleasantly surprised by that. But it's a really interesting idea. Braille displays, a standard being supported by the biggest names in technology. So it's essentially a USB HID standard.
Yeah. When I read this, the thing that blew me away was the fact that this didn't exist. I did not know that. Didn't know that the Braille displays were basically proprietary. If you wanted to switch over, you couldn't because you couldn't just plug your Braille keyboard or display into another device. So it's about time, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty excited about that. I just wanted to give a brief mention of that. I just think it's great. It makes me happy. Another thing that I was kind of crazed by, Google and LG made what they're calling the highest resolution VR screen yet, 4800 by 3480. That is 1443 pixels per inch. For a little perspective, an Oculus Go is 538 pixels per inch. HTC's Vive Pro is 615 pixels per inch. And it's running at a 120 hertz refresh rate. Really good article on that up on Engadget that you're seeing on the screen right now. One of the things they did was talk to a Google staff hardware engineer, Carlin Vieri, who said, quote, humans are capable of seeing 9600 by 9600 pixels per eye, and our field of view can only reach 160 degrees horizontally and 150 degrees vertically. Google's prototype screen can manage 120 degrees, which is pretty fantastic, but still not quite there yet. So what they're playing around with is something Google researchers called foveated rendering. So it processes the image in high resolution and then allows the objects in the periphery to sort of lose focus. So that shrinks the data processing placed on the CPU or the GPU and hopefully will create a more aesthetically pleasing experience for your eyeballs.
That's actually been one of the most off-putting things about VR for me because, you're displaying things as sharp at the edges as you are at the center. And that's not how my vision works. And there's just something, my brain is saying something's wrong here because this is not how the world actually looks what's going on.
Right.
So, you know, if you can do that, if you can give me that sort of peripheral vision effect while at the same time reducing the demands on the processor, that just means that I'm going to have a higher frame rate overall. I love that. Now, if they could just do something to correct for my really bad vision in one eye, we'd be good to go.
Well, the Oculus Go, you can actually get the little, you can get custom lenses made that drop into the Oculus Go. I think that's pretty slick. Ties you to the Oculus Go, but.
Well, I mean, the problem is I don't need a prescription. I basically need cornea surgery. I don't think there's an app for that yet. They're working on it.
I'm sorry for laughing. I'm just like imagining the cornea surgery app and then just being like, nope. Big old cup of nope. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us on This Week in Computer Hardware. So you're putting SSDs into a NAS box.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you have coming up in the near future?
Well, I mean, we're down to the last couple of episodes. I have 3 weeks left, including this week, 3 weeks left here at TWIT before I head off to the next stage of my life. But we're doing the Synology Madness. We just did part three. We're doing part four in 2 weeks. And that will include things like running VPNs off of a Synology router so you can get back into your network securely. We're going to be setting up a over-the-air network DVR using a Synology NAS and Plex and a home run box. So that should be fun. We've got a couple of makery projects still to go. The one that people have been wanting for a while is I created a while back an enclosure for a Raspberry Pi that was battery-powered. So you could either use it as sort of a data center device that has its own UPS, or it's good for hours of usage on the go if you wanted to set up, you know, game emulation on the back of the car for the family vacation. We've also got a couple of, I can't spoil it, but we've got one really fun farewell episode that's going to be pre-recorded and then released at the end of June when technically my time at TWIT has ended. But it's starting to be that time just to say goodbye and say farewell.
I can't sing that or we'll get sued.
That's right. But remember, you do need to come to Rome. An absolute necessity. We will have plenty of room. We've already got a bunch of people who are planning their times. So when you know...
I got to bring four, so... Let me figure out how we're going to pay for it.
I can give you free room and board, so that'll help. But
it's the big aeroplane thing over the Atlantic that gets complicated.
Kids don't really appreciate Rome. They might just want to stay home.
That would involve finding somebody to take. That's a conversation for offline, I think.
Actually, I know who you can get. Hase loves kids, and she loves your kid. So there you go.
I love my kids too, but they might be a bit much for a week while mom and dad are on another continent.
But this will be good for her because right now she only has the baby for a couple of hours at a time experience. I think if she had the baby for a week, then she'd realize, oh yeah, okay, they're not all fun.
I don't even know where to go with that thought.
It's parenthood.
Children. Take your time.
But Patrick, it's been an absolute pleasure working with you. Thank you for inviting me, by the way. I didn't know this when I walked in. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for doing it. Now, Ryan is indisposed, as I will affectionately call it.
I got a little bit of the scuttlebutt. That sounds exciting. That's fun.
He's having a good week.
Yes, he is.
He's having a good week. Oh, my goodness. Well, we probably won't see you before you head to Rome. So I will officially, on behalf of Ryan and myself, wish you the safest of travels. The best of times, and nothing but delicious pasta at the Vatican.
Although we meet again,
probably, until we meet again. Yeah, I was going to say it's probably a pretty international menu.
Not as much as you might think. it's mostly pasta salad. You know, there's very little meat in the Italian diet. I've noticed that.
Hmm.
Not like in the American diet. There's meat in every meal, and you will go days without meat in Italy.
As long as you balance your legumes, you'll be fine.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you again. Thank you again so much for making the time for us. And good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is drawn to a close. If this is your first episode, welcome. Please go over to twit.tv/twitch to find out all the information on how to subscribe. And, you know, all the older episodes. We got a lot of them. This is episode 468 and climbing. you can find. Father, what's the best place for people to look for you in the future?
You know, it still has to be Twitter. Twitter is always going to have the pointer to wherever I am currently. Like, if you had followed me on Twitter, twitter.com/PadreSJ, you would have seen that in the past 6 days, I went Rome, then Montreal, then Quebec City, then back to Montreal, Regina, back to Toronto, back to San Francisco.
That's a lot of travel.
By the way, that place, I was going to sushi, and I'm walking down a street in Toronto, Bloor Street, and I run into this. I'm like, okay, if that's not a clear sign that I need to go get a burger, I don't know what is.
A burning bush. But.
Indeed.
That might get me into trouble. Oh, my goodness. As always, you can find me here at This Week in Computer Hardware, or head on over to avxl.com, the podcast to host about home theater and audio with Robert Herron, or my beloved weekly video, Tech Thing, TakThing.com. That's the weekly show I host with Shannon, where we answer viewer questions and review products. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Father Robert Ballister.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.